In 2015, the Irish economy grew by an unprecedented 25%. In just 12 short months, it achieved the previous 12 years' worth of growth. Needless to say, that doesn't happen anywhere. The global average that year was 3.1%. Even China and India could only manage 7 and 8. And yet, 2015 wasn't the only time Ireland exceeded all possible expectations. 6 years later, its economy grew by nearly 14%. Today, Ireland is the second richest country in the world with a population over 1 million. Its per capita GDP of $104,000 is 36% higher than the United States. Even more impressive is how recent all this is. 30 years ago, Ireland lagged slightly behind the European average. Now, it's almost three times wealthier. In the 70s, 80s, and 90s, it received billions of euros in subsidies from the EU. Today, it contributes billions of euros. Back then, thousands fled the country in search of greener pastures. But since 1996, the flow of migration has reversed. Skilled professionals from around the globe now relocate to the island every year. For all these reasons, Ireland has been called the Celtic Tiger, in reference to the rapid rise of the four Asian tigers: Hong Kong, Taiwan, Singapore, and South Korea. There's just one tiny problem. It's not real. These numbers are all real, and these facts are technically true, but what they imply is not. The Irish economic miracle is an elaborate, carefully preserved illusion. To see why, we need to roll back the clock to 1980, the year everything changed. Sponsored by GiveWell, the independent nonprofit whose rigorous charity research allows you and I to make the largest possible impact. In 1980, Apple became the first foreign tech company to manufacture in Ireland. According to CEO Tim Cook, it saw in the country, quote, a community rich with talent and one that could accommodate growth. And in the official corporate version of history, that's where the story ends. Apple took a chance on this small developing nation, and the two grew hand in hand. Apple's press release for its 40th anniversary repeatedly refers to its Irish family and community. But the timing tells a different story. Ireland has pursued business-friendly policies since at least 1956, when it began offering 10 years of generous tax breaks to foreign manufacturers. But after joining what would become the European Union in 1973, it agreed to phase out those incentives starting in 1981. Apple, in other words, snuck in the door right at the 11th hour, securing for itself a full decade of tax breaks during the company's most vulnerable era. It was during this period that Steve Jobs was replaced by the former CEO of Pepsi, John Sculley, who initiated a major restructuring. The company was losing billions of dollars, and bankruptcy was on the horizon. Ireland wasn't doing much better. Nearly a quarter of its population was unemployed. So, as its 10-year window began to close, Apple approached the country with an offer. It would funnel nearly all of its worldwide revenue into Ireland, but it was only willing to pay an effective tax rate of less than 2%. And while 2% may not be much, that was 2% the country would otherwise never see. In return, Apple would have a safe place to stash its international profits. Ireland, desperate for whatever cash it could get its hands on, accepted this opening bid without negotiation. The only thing left to do was write the tax code. To make this arrangement legal, it worked backwards, crafting rules that would artificially produce the 2% figure. And just like that, Apple had set its own tax rate. Now, the reason this was possible was IRS Form 8832. Form 8832 doesn't look like much. It's a pretty unassuming three pages. But it completely transformed the American tax landscape. Before 8832, U.S. corporations were required to pay U.S. taxes on their worldwide income, whether their bananas were sold in South Carolina or South Africa. Until recently, that rate was 35%. After 1996, U.S. corporations could simply check a box, allowing them to avoid paying this tax as long as their money stayed overseas. A year later, Ireland passed a similar law. Now, companies only had to pay tax in the country where their key decisions were made. In practice, anywhere they wanted. Or, even better, nowhere at all. The trick was that no one was enforcing consistency. In America, Apple could argue its subsidiary was genuinely Irish. Over in Ireland, Apple could simultaneously argue it was really based somewhere else, like Bermuda. That was step one. Apple had created a low-tax Irish subsidiary, but it still needed to move its international profit into that company. When you walk into an Apple store in Munich and buy an iPhone, that profit needs to somehow end up in Apple Ireland, not Apple Germany. The solution was intellectual property. IP is the perfect vehicle for tax avoidance because it's A, extremely valuable. Who could argue that the Apple logo isn't worth a fortune? And yet B, extremely difficult to value. Who's to say it's worth $1 trillion and not $1.2? By moving around these priceless yet intangible patents, logos, and other trademarks, Apple could move its profit too. It simply gave the rights to use its IP outside of the Americas to its Irish subsidiary. Then, whenever it sold an iPhone in Munich for, say, $100, Apple Germany would have to pay Apple Ireland, let's say, $98 for use of its trademark. Thus, 98% of the profit would be attributed to low-tax Ireland. But there's a wrinkle. Officially, Ireland's corporate tax rate is 12.5%. Recall that to reduce this to less than 2%, Apple declared its Irish subsidiary a tax resident of somewhere like Bermuda, where the rate was even lower. Except, Ireland imposes a special 20% tax on transfers to known tax havens, like Bermuda. Apple, therefore, needed to transfer its money through an intermediary, another company, this time in the Netherlands, to which the first Irish company would sublicense its IP. Next, Apple created a second Irish company, which sublicensed the IP from the Dutch one. Lastly, this second Irish company would license its IP to Apple subsidiaries across the globe. Now, all together. You walk into a German Apple store and buy an iPhone. Apple Germany argues that most of the value of that sale was derived from intellectual property, property it doesn't own. Therefore, Apple Germany pays a royalty to that second Irish company. The second Irish company also doesn't own anything. It too pays a fee to the Dutch company. The Dutch company does the same, forwarding most of the money it's just received onto the first Irish company. Finally, the first Irish company claims its key decisions are made in a small Caribbean country, where the corporate tax rate is at or near 0%. Voila! Apple pioneered this strategy, which became known as the double Irish with a Dutch sandwich, but it was by no means the only corporation to take advantage. Google, Microsoft, and Facebook all did the same. During the 90s and early 2000s, US multinationals made an increasing share of their profits overseas, billions of dollars of which made their way to Ireland. And while most people assume some level of tax shenanigans, the astonishing scale of this effort largely flew under the radar for years. Much of what we know today is only thanks to independent researchers and academics like Emma Clancy, Brian O'Boyle, and Kieran Allen. Then, in 2013, as the public began taking notice, the US Senate held high-profile hearings, attended by Tim Cook. With the world's attention focused on Ireland, the country feigned innocence. Apple had simply exploited a loophole, never mind that it had expressly written its tax code to produce these results. The double Irish was no more, it announced. Irish companies would now be taxed in, if you can believe it, Ireland. Apple's first Irish subsidiary could no longer claim to be a tax resident of, say, Bermuda. But not to worry. Generally speaking, tax treaties supersede local laws. Companies, therefore, could simply replace Bermuda with a country that shared a tax treaty with Ireland. For Apple, that country was Jersey, the British Crown dependency with a population of just over 100,000 people. Problem solved. Now, it should be clear by now that Ireland is, in fact, a tax haven. The question is its economic success real? Recall that Ireland is one of the richest countries on the planet, with a per capita GDP of over $100,000, and that its economy grew by 25% in 2015 alone. Critics of its tax regime argue that this is all just a statistical mirage, that the country is little more than a Bermuda, Bahamas, or British Virgin Islands with castles. Consider, for example, what happened in 2015. Irish workers weren't suddenly 25% more productive, nor did Irish companies export 25% more goods. No, what really happened is that when Ireland closed the double Irish loophole, it opened a new one. Starting in 2015, companies could subtract from their tax bill the full cost of any IP they purchased. So, what did companies do? They bought a whole lot of IP. From themselves, of course. Companies like Apple transferred an estimated $270 billion worth of trademarks and patents into their Irish subsidiaries. And since, on paper, trademarks are no different from oil or refrigerators, Ireland's GDP grew by 25%. This is what skeptics mean when they say its economy isn't real. Even worse, while the benefits aren't real, they argue, there are real costs. The dominance of foreign multinationals in tiny Ireland has contributed to a housing crisis that makes America's look tame by comparison. Between 1991 and 2007, Dublin home prices increased by 429%, according to these researchers. Secondly, the Irish economy is incredibly dependent on a very small number of American corporations. Just 10 are responsible for 60% of the country's corporate tax receipts. The top three pay about a third of the total. From the recent boom to the busts of the Great Recession and the dot-com bubble, the Irish economy is fully at the mercy of Washington. In 2021, Ireland was pressured into signing an OECD agreement that sets a 15% global minimum corporate tax rate and reallocates profits to the country in which a sale physically occurred. If the past is any indication, Ireland will simply invent a new loophole. Still, the risk remains that it will one day truly be forced to change its ways and lose out on this revenue. And not just revenue. As proponents of Ireland's tax regime are quick to point out, part of the implicit bargain struck nearly 40 years ago between Apple and Ireland was that the former provide high-quality, highly paid employment. The United States, along with much of the world, experienced a baby boom following the end of World War II. 20 years later, these millions of young adults joined the workforce, producing this steady 40-year rise in employment. Ireland's baby boom, on the other hand, was about 30 years delayed and much more compressed. As you can see, it suddenly had millions of young, working-age people in the 1990s. Apple and its peers put thousands of these 20- and 30-year-olds to work. Today, as much as 10% of the Irish workforce is employed by foreign companies, nearly all American and nearly all in tech. Apple's 2020 press release about its Irish community wasn't a total smokescreen. It truly does employ more than just accountants. Even if low taxes brought multinationals in the first place, this argument goes, they've stayed for its genuine operational advantages. Indeed, Ireland is now the only English-speaking country in the EU. It's a mere 6 hours from New York, and its population is highly educated. Sure, Ireland is a tax haven, they might admit, but its economic success is very real. But what both those who argue Ireland's economy is real and those who argue it's fake misunderstand is that real and fake aren't contradictory. In fact, these two sides of its economy are complementary. Take, for instance, what happened in 2013. Shortly after the explosive U.S. Senate hearings, the European Union launched an investigation into Apple's tax practices. And in 2016, it concluded that Ireland had granted it special treatment. And while it is, of course, entitled to set its own tax laws, as a member of the EU, it also agrees not to grant preferential treatment to any one corporation. The court, in a ruling that has since been overturned and is now in the process of a second appeal, ordered Apple to pay Ireland $14 billion in unpaid taxes. So, how did Ireland react to this $14 billion windfall? With outrage. To the confusion of many Irish citizens, their government launched an immediate challenge to this ruling. Now, you might be thinking, of course, better to turn down a small sum of money today to preserve the larger flow tomorrow. But this was no small amount of money. Remember, Ireland is a country of just 5 million people. $14 billion would have paid for the country's entire annual health budget, or 7 years of transportation. Let's not forget that lower corporate tax rates are merely an alternative means of achieving the same goal. The Irish government, like every other government, is in the business of collecting more taxes. So why turn down so much cash? Especially since, in the eyes of Apple, Ireland's hands were clean. It didn't initiate the court case, the EU did. Because Ireland is not just a tax haven. After all, there are safer, cheaper, and more secretive places to stash your profits. It isn't even the lowest tax jurisdiction in Europe. Apple could surely find a more accommodating government in a smaller, less democratic Caribbean island. What Ireland really sells, and what the Caribbean can't offer, is its untarnished reputation. Yes, the ultra-low taxes of the Cayman Islands, but without the connotation of the Cayman Islands. Here's how it works. First, Ireland's real economy, the one in which real people go to work every day and fix pipes, connect servers, and sell computers, creates the illusion of legitimacy. Second, thanks to this illusion, companies concerned about their image, like Apple, choose Ireland as their tax shelter. Third, in doing so, Apple inflates the country's economic health, creating the appearance of unbelievable wealth. Fourth and finally, this economic miracle is seized upon by those with an agenda to lower corporate tax rates, who argue, look what's possible when you're just friendly to businesses. Without the real, in other words, the fake wouldn't exist. And without the fake, neither would the real. In that 2013 Senate hearing, Tim Cook proudly proclaimed, quote, Apple does not hold money on a Caribbean island, and, quote, does not have a bank account in the Cayman Islands. That was true. And that's why Apple chooses Ireland. The reason Ireland fought the EU ruling was that something more important than $14 billion was at stake. Something extraordinarily valuable, yet impossible to precisely value, much like the intellectual property Apple moves between its subsidiaries. Its reputation. In truth, many of the things we value the most are also the most difficult to measure. Happiness, love, creativity, and doing good. We all want to do the most good, but when we give to, say, a charity, how do we ensure that we're making the largest possible impact? Well, in 2007, a few friends had that same question and decided to start GiveWell. They closely scrutinize all the data we have on charities and publish this information on the GiveWell website, allowing you and I to compare some of the over 1.5 million nonprofit organizations in the United States. That way, when we go to donate, we know where our money is going, what it's doing, and who it's helping. These are non-partisan, cost-effective, evidence-backed causes like preventing malaria, solving vitamin deficiencies, and incentivizing childhood vaccines. We shouldn't have to become experts on charitable giving. When we shop for phones or cars, we search for reviews. So why not outsource that work to charity researchers? What I like about GiveWell is that they don't take any fees. All your money goes straight to the charity of your choice. They've even gone out of their way to advise me not to disparage other charities, which to me is a pretty clear indicator of their values. Plus, right now, new donors can get their entire donation matched, up to $100, before the end of the year, as long as funds last. So hurry now while you still can and go to givewell.org, that's givewell.org, or click the link in the description or on screen now, then choose YouTube and enter Polymatter at checkout to do twice as much good.